Barack Obama is poised to name a running mate. Ralph Nader wants to appear on the Wisconsin presidential ballot. And John McCain doesn't know how many homes he owns. We will talk about these issues and more this hour during the Week in Review. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's now 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, August the 22nd. And every Friday during this hour, we welcome in two guests from different political perspectives to talk with you about the news of the week. And we invite you to call in to comment on the news of the week and to bring up a topic from the news this week that you want our guests to talk about. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And please call in as soon as you hear us talking about a topic that you want to join in on, because we do move from issue to issue as we go along. Let me welcome our two guests. We are very happy to have with us John Smart, the former chair of the Price County Democratic Party. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And also with us, Margaret Farrow, the former lieutenant governor of Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, let's start with the new issue that has developed on the presidential campaign trail, which started when John McCain was asked by a reporter this.
How many houses do you and Mrs. McCain have?
I think I'll have my staff get to you. I'm going to tell you about this.
So he had to have his staff get back to the reporter on that. I read that at first the staff got back to the reporter and said it was four homes, and that has then been amended to seven. Well, John Smart, do you think John McCain just made a big mistake?
Oh, I think he made a colossal mistake. A lot of people in the United States are worrying whether they're going to be able to hang on to their one home. And I have no trouble remembering how many of them they've got, because there is only one, and it might be going to foreclosure. I think it's going to be a major issue. It's one of those things that will stick in people's mind when they read about when they think about all the troubles that they're having with the economy and with mortgages and all the rest of it. And then they read about McCain, who says that to be truly rich, you have to have at least $5 million a year, and he can't remember how many homes he's got. Well, that kind of puts him in a different league, doesn't it?
Does it, Margaret Farrell?
Well, I think, first of all, we want successful people to be our president, and I think we have two men who are successful, and they have proven themselves. I would say on McCain's part, he is generally very direct with his answers. He's very specific and exact with his answers. I think he hesitated because he didn't know in terms of how the net around him and how broad it was actually was the number that he should use it to be accurate. If he had said, I have four, and then the press went on to say, but, you know, your wife's, the trust that your wife's family is part of has several more, and since you're part of that trust being married to Cindy, you were wrong. You lied to us. What he was saying is, I want to give you an accurate answer. His wife happens to be a woman from a very wealthy family. She's proven her ability to continue to manage that family's trust very effectively and at the same time be very giving in the interests she has gotten involved in around the world, quite frankly. All right, so we have a wealthy person there. He was trying to give an exact number. At least he and his wife paid for their houses with their own money. I think Barack Obama is the last one who should talk about where money came from with his million-dollar house in Chicago.
Yeah.
That he's had the involvement of a now-convicted felon in getting it under market value.
Let me play two ads. Both campaigns jumped on this issue immediately. Barack Obama's campaign came out with the first ad that I will play, questioning whether John McCain is out of touch. And the McCain campaign responded by saying, well, look who's talking, and how did you get your house, Barack Obama? I'll play them back to back, and then we'll talk more about these ads.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Maybe you're struggling just to pay the mortgage on your home. But recently, John McCain said the fundamentals of our economy are strong. Then again, that same day, when asked how many houses he owns, McCain lost track. He couldn't remember. Well, it's seven. 7 houses. And here's one house America can't afford to let John McCain move into.
Barack Obama knows a lot about housing problems. One of his biggest fundraisers helped him buy his million-dollar mansion, purchasing part of the property he couldn't afford. From Obama, Rezko got political favors, including $14 million from taxpayers. Now, he's a convicted felon facing jail. That's a housing problem.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
All right, there we go. John Smart, does Barack Obama also have a housing problem?
Well, the whole Tony Rezko story is a very complex one, and I'm not sure exactly how, for that matter, Senator Obama has never been accused directly of any complicity whatsoever in whatever Mr. Resco's problems were, and nobody has ever really been able to explain how he was involved in buying Senator Obama's house. I don't know that that's going to carry as much, quite frankly. I think that the mere fact that John McCain can't remember how many houses he's got that either implies that his memory is failing, or it implies that he's so rich that he doesn't even keep track of such little details as that. And it's that kind of thing, as I said before, Joy, that's going to stick in people's minds. If they want to really investigate the Tony Rezko situation in Chicago, that's fine, but that's a very complex story. And I have a feeling that more people are going to just remember the John McCain snap judgment.
Yeah, Margaret Farrow, Hillary Clinton did bring up that the Rezko scandal during the primaries, and it didn't seem to stick or cause too much damage to Barack Obama.
No, I think in the middle of all the primary, there were an awful lot of things going back and forth between the candidates, as there always is. But I think now when you're focused on who is the person that you are saying you would have at the red phone making the decisions that have to be made, the very difficult ones, I think people are paying a lot more attention. And when you have the wife of Tony Rezko the same day going into a split of property and buying, as I say, the house that he is in at an under market value. Wouldn't we all love to buy some property at an under market value? And yet that is all documented for those who want to take time and don't want to go to the quick reaction of, oh, I think he's getting too old. He didn't remember. No, I think he hesitated to be exactly correct and ask people to refer to his staff for the exactly correct answer. And I think it's a very weak argument and certainly a knee-jerk one trying to point to the age of a man who I think is a true patriot and very capable of being president.
What about those who are saying, though, that this kind of points to, this is almost like the first president, George Bush, when he marveled at a supermarket scanner, that there's a lot of people are saying that John McCain is having a moment like that?
Well, I think we can point to all those sorts of things. I guess there are so many larger things in terms of substantive answers to substantive questions in debates that ultimately will make the decision for the voters. You can give any type of a 20-point quiz to people on current events and current events, including the price of eggs in the supermarket. Mm-hmm. And I think there are an awful lot of people walking the streets right now who, because of credit cards and what have you, pay for things at stores without counting out bills as they used to, and probably don't even look at the bottom line of credit cards, much less know what the price of eggs is, which is, you know, one of the things I recall going back some time was either milk or eggs or bread or something that the first George Bush was challenged about. I want somebody who knows what to do about the Georgia incident with Russia and all of those things, not necessarily who spends his time going in the grocery store regularly.
We will talk about all those other issues as well. But last word on this housing problem, John Smart.
I agree with Margaret in the sense that it's really a relatively minor question, and I'm not going to dwell on it any further. I just think that it's unfortunate from McCain's standpoint because it's one of those little things that's going to stick with him, I'm afraid.
Well, a couple of calls. Dave in Wanakee. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Not to beat a dead horse, but in addition to the keys, McCain told someone who was asking him about American workers, he said that illegal aliens, Americans wouldn't take those jobs even if they paid $50 an hour, which is $100,000 a year. And it just points to how difficult it will be for John McCain to paint Barack Obama as an elitist if he can't even remember how many houses he has?
Yeah. So, Margaret Farrell, he can't, John McCain can't paint Barack Obama as an elitist now?
Well, I think, you know, it's going to become certainly, there's going to be personality challenges involved on both sides of this. I think it's unfortunate. I think, as I said, we should stay with the real issues. Statements that McCain, who understands the immigrant worker and the issue of the borders, because he represents a border state that has a great deal of day-to-day concerns for security and for jobs and for the needs of human beings. I think his comment, in my own sense, was very well taken, that there are jobs in this country that millions of immigrant workers are involved in that Americans will not take, which is why they're being filled. And I think he was trying to make the strong point that no matter what you pay them, they would not take those jobs. And I think he used the figure $50. I don't recall the incident at all that the gentleman, the caller, is referring to. But my point is he was making the point these jobs are there because Americans aren't filling them. And I think that's a very valid point.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Smart?
Yeah, nothing to add.
All right. We will talk about other issues in the news this week, talking about Barack Obama, who said yesterday he has made his selection for running mate. We don't know yet who it is, but that won't stop us from speculating after this break. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You're listening to The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm not the guy. See
you. You know that for sure?
That was Joe Biden saying, "I'm not the guy," when reporters were trying to talk with him about whether he was Barack Obama's pick as a running mate. We don't know for sure who that pick is, though we know Obama has made the selection. He says he will be campaigning with his running mate in Springfield, Illinois, for a noon event tomorrow in Springfield. So we will know for sure by then, maybe sooner. Who do you think it might be? Who would you like it to be? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. As we spend the next few minutes talking about the Veep sweepstakes during this portion of our Week in Review program, we are talking with two guests, different perspectives, John Smart, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party, Margaret Farrell, former lieutenant governor of Wisconsin. John Smart, who do you think it's going to be? Any strong feelings on this?
No, I haven't a clue. For a long time, I was saying it was going to be Kathleen Sebelius, but then her star seems to have dropped a little bit, and I really don't know, and I don't think anybody does. In fact, I just checked my email again because the campaign promised me that I'd get an email telling me as soon as Obama was ready to announce it, and I just checked, and there's nothing there yet.
Yeah.
I think that Senator Biden is strongly in contention, and that would be fine with me. I worked on Senator Biden's campaign in 1988 when he ran for the presidency. And I think Senator Bi from Indiana is highly qualified, as is Governor Kane from Virginia. Those are the three that seem to be on the top of the list. But it might be somebody from out of left field. It might be maybe he might pop up with Hillary Clinton's because everybody has pretty much written her off. I don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen, and I don't think anybody else does either. It's all just guessing game.
Well, that's true, but that's not stopping us. Margaret Farrell, any idea?
No, I guess certainly I wouldn't have, and I don't have John's email source. But I think it's a very, very clever public relations situation that he's developed here in the campaign. Campaign has developed because what they're doing right now is having people sign on to their text messaging link, which is giving them a much larger, broader audience of people to ultimately text message to between now and November. And I think this is very, very clever. There's people now who have to have things instantly. We're used to everything when I want it. When I want it, you know, we no longer have the 10 o'clock news. We have 24-hour news, so we can turn our TVs on at any time for news. And the same thing with our internet links. So I think it's very clever. They're carrying it on as they are. The key thing, I believe, is that this is his first critical appointment. We're always told that people often can be judged by the people they bring around them, who they surround them with themselves with as advisors. And we certainly look to someone like President Lincoln, who literally, as the book has titled it, brought in a team of rivals around him and took on all the people who actually were opposed to him or ran against him to become a very interesting confederation of people who held this country together at a very critical time. So it's going to tell a lot about who he picks, if one can say you do judge a person by these types of decisions. I think personally, I think Senator Bi brings a lot more to the plate. Certainly Senator Biden brings years and years of experience, having entered the legislature before he was 30 and being there ever since, and certainly knows the world scene very well. And Senator Obama needs that balance. There's no question about it. Mm-hmm. I think Senator Bi, having been a governor, he makes me feel good about it, because being a person in the executive branch, you have to have that management, that sense of the buck stops with me. I've got to make the decision. I can't punt it to someone else. And the fact that the vice president, really the role that the key role is to be there to step in if, heaven forbid, something happens to the president. There's something about Senator Bi that appeals to me, and I think that it'll be interesting to see who he chooses.
Well, let's bring in Bob in Darlington, who likes Evan Bi too, right, Bob?
Yeah, that's right. That's who I guess. I could be wrong, but I like Evan for many different reasons. But one of the main reasons is that in order for Barack to win the presidency, I think this time around, he needs Indiana. He needs other states, but I think that's a very turnkey state to win.
Yeah, well, let's go to one more caller in our Veep sweepstakes here for Barack Obama. Ned and Wassa, what do you think?
Yes, I'd like to see Joe Biden, and I was disappointed by the comment a moment ago. I was kind of confused about that as to whether he is actually out of the running, but if he doesn't get it, I still am in favor of Bill Richardson because of his foreign experience. And most people view Barack Obama's weakest area as his foreign experience. So I think Joe Biden would be the best, and I think that Bill Richardson would be the next best in terms of foreign experience and shore up the Obama campaign.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ned. John Smart, do you think that Joe Biden was saying he knew he was not the selection at that time, or was just trying to get rid of the reporters?
I didn't take that at all, that he said he was not going to be involved. And they were talking on the news last night about how all of Biden's family and friends were gathering at his house in Maryland, and it just seemed or Delaware, Maryland, yeah, Delaware, I forget which one.
Yeah, he's a senator from Delaware.
They were all gathering there, and everybody was surmising that the reason was that there was going to be a big announcement. I don't think Joe Biden's out of the picture. At this point, as I said before, we're all just guessing, assuming that the decision has been made. We don't really know.
Yeah, Joe Biden would be good, though, John Smart, in part because of that, his foreign relations experience and something that would shore up.
Joe Biden is the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and has a lot of experience in foreign relations. He also was chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee and has experience there. And he's been, as Margaret said, he's been in the Senate for a long time. He's very knowledgeable and he's very personable. And I also think something very important is that when Barack Obama was talking about who he wanted to choose, he wanted somebody who was not going to be a yes man, somebody who was not going to just agree with him. And I think that if anybody is familiar with Joe Biden, he's argumentative. He's not going to bury his own opinions just in the sense of trying to be polite. And I think that he would give his honest opinions to a President Obama.
Yeah. Well, and there are others who are saying that this Russia-Georgia conflict really is highlighting that gap in Barack Obama's resume and thinking that that's responsible for his slide in the polls recently. John Smart on that as well?
That's a very complex issue, and I'm afraid that the American people are not getting the full story. I make a point of trying to read the press from around the world as much as I can on the Internet, and I also am in communication with a number of people in that part of the world. And it's interesting to me, for instance, a very good friend of mine is in Uzbekistan, and as he and I have been communicating back and forth, and this friend is not exactly pro-Russian, because the Russians, after all, invaded their country and occupied it for over a century, and they're not very fond of Russians in general. But the attitude in Central Asia seems to be that Saakashvili would not have made the attempts that he did to occupy South Ossetia and Abkhazia if he were not being directed to do so from Washington. That seems to be the general opinion of people in that part of the world. Now, whether it's true or not, nobody really knows. I don't think we have any real surety about what the truth of that matter is. But if that's the public perception, and I think it's the public perception not just in Central Asia but in much of the world, that the United States in recent years has tended to be an invading and occupying force. And if we are using Georgia as a pawn in our game to somehow play against Russia to distract from Iraq and Iran and the rest of the other problems, that's what the rest of the world is perceiving. And I think that's where the danger lies. The whole story about Ossetia is an interesting one. The people of Ossetia consider themselves to be the descendants of the ancient Scythians, and they speak a language that is closer to Farsi, the language of Iran, than it is to the language of the Georgians or the Russians who surround them. They would like to be an independent country, but it was the Russians who initially divided them into a north and south division, which is a typical thing for conquering powers to do, to divide up groups like that. Yeah. So there's going to be a problem there. There's been a problem there for a long time, and it's not going to go away. But for us to be so simplistic about it as to say that the great Russian bear is once again stomping on its little neighbor and all that kind of stuff, I don't think we're really reading enough into the story. We need to know more. We need to have better information.
Margaret Farrell, your thoughts on the Russia-Georgia conflict and how that's playing into the presidential race?
Well, I think, first of all, it certainly does, because it grabs headlines and it causes news people to ask both candidates about their views on it. It certainly gets involved in the presidential, the mix of presidential discussions. But I think that, I find John's comments very interesting. I know that he knows the area well. I met with women from Uzbekistan some time back when I was in office, and I was very interested to hear their their interest in developing their own country now that they were free of Russia. I think his comment about the North and South Division reminds me, in show my age by saying it, and also my study of history, that's what they insisted on doing with Korea, for example, at the end of World War II, and that's how we ended up with a North and South Korea. And it's an interesting situation. I remember, quite frankly, there's an interesting quote that I picked up reading this week about all of these issues that George Kennan, the American ambassador at the time to the Soviet Union, who said, "Russia can have it. Its borders, only enemies are vassals." They are constantly in that kind of flux. And I think, and John, certainly I agree, and I can understand there are people in the world who feel we are an invader, as he described it. I can't quite believe, nor would I think even in calm thinking, that our country right now, with the extension we have of protecting the democracies and trying to keep freedom alive in Pakistan or Afghanistan or Iraq and that situation, why we would bite off more to create the right situation for presidential politics, I just think is really a reach. And maybe in the minds of those who are simplistic about it in the foreign countries who don't really know America and what we're about and what we've been about for over 200 years. But I think it certainly highlights who is more capable and has a clearer commitment and focus to what our foreign policy should be. And I think, quite frankly, during these last 10 days or so, John McCain has shown his ability, and Barack Obama has continued to give lengthy answers that sometimes kind of lose their way along the way in terms of the logic of them.
John Smart?
Yeah, I would disagree insofar as John McCain's solution to these problems. His solution is to drop Russia from the G8, and his solution is to treat Russia as some kind of an outcast. And I don't think that that's the answer. It goes back to something that Barack Obama said a long time ago, which he was criticized for all over, and that is that you need to talk to your enemies, and we can't pretend that Russia's not there. It's just not going to work. just what's happening right now, for instance, the countries of the world are lining up on two sides again. We're essentially recreating the Cold War by all of this. We just found out that the president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, had just been to Russia to talk to the president, Medvedev, about buying more arms for Syria. Well, we don't really like the idea of the Russians arming Syria, but the Syrians are in a position where they think this is what we need to do. And by John McCain's bellicose language about how we need to cut Russia out of the mix and not talk to them and not allow them into the G8 summits and that sort of thing is just silly.
Yeah. I think it was Joe Lieberman, Senator Lieberman, who suggested they be temporarily left off the G8 summit type discussions rather than McCain at this point. But I think certainly President Bush spoke directly to both the president and Putin in Beijing, as we know, about this issue, and so we've had very direct discussions with them. And it's not as though we're trying to dictate something. We're trying to say, let's not have another flare-up here of the old hot war leading to an extension of the Cold War, as many of us remember better than some of the younger generation.
We need to take a couple of calls on this and then move on to other issues. John in Madison, you're on the air. John.
Morning.
Yes.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to make a comment on my perception of how John McCain fits into this Georgia and Russia thing. At least, that's, you know, being a kind of a casual news observer and right in the fence between the two candidates, to me it looks like John McCain has at least come out and said something very definitive, and that's been in line with his previous statements on general foreign affairs, versus Obama, who really hasn't said anything about it, as far as I'm concerned, and that really is alarming because it's to me it seems to be a major developing crisis, and if not for the next year, then for the next 10 years. And I think the Russians are a very aggressive, nationalistic, non-democratic, tyrannical kind of a country that that is a very strange factor in all of this.
Yeah. Well, so, John Smart, what is Obama saying about this?
Obama's saying to be very careful is what he's saying, and I think he's also essentially repeating what he said before, as I said, that we need to talk to everybody. We need to keep lines of communication open. And to correct a little bit what Margaret said, yes, Joe Lieberman did come out this week about saying that we ought to remove Russia from the G8, but John McCain said the same thing a month ago. He was talking about it even then. And this, I think, is just, to me, wrong-headed, totally wrong-headed. And again, I wish that the news media in the United States gave more background to this story because it's really complicated. I tried to give some of that background before, and I think that we need to learn more about the situation and not go blundering in.
Yeah, we don't have time, unfortunately, because we have so many other issues in this particular program to cover. But since you brought up Joe Lieberman, I did mean to ask, Joe Lieberman and Tom Ridge, two pro-choice candidates, are being bantied about as possible running mates for John McCain. John McCain says he'll make his decision on August the 29th, the end of next week, right after the Dems wrap up their convention. Margaret Farrell, would putting a pro-choice, well, independent or Republican on the ticket with John McCain be a mistake for John McCain?
Well, I guess I'm not going to say it'll be a mistake, but I think there is a need on both sides to pull in every bit of the base of the candidates, and that's true of Senator Obama. It's true of Senator McCain. They have to make sure that they have their base in total and then be able to, you know, attract those voters who aren't automatically Republican or Democratic. And I think there is a need to have the base in our in the Republican Party as strong as it can possibly be. I think both individuals you mentioned, Senator Lieberman, the independent now, and Governor Tom Ridge, who I have a great deal of respect for, are very interesting, but certainly do run against some of the core base of the Republican Party in the fact that there is this strong feeling among some Republicans. And, it isn't, you know, we're a larger tent than many people think, but it is not an entirely a pro-life party. But there is a strong base of pro-life voters that John McCain has to be sure are with him through this as part of his base. So I personally would like to see both of those gentlemen in a cabinet of John McCain's. I think Senator Lieberman would be a marvelous Secretary of State, quite frankly, because he would bring both the image and the experience of a broader view to the world who, as John Smart says, has all sorts of opinions of Americans and would not see us as so partisan that someone previous to this in the other party and then an independent was part of the new administration. So I'm hoping both of the men are in the cabinet, but I think there would be a better choice for vice president.
Yeah. Who, Mitt Romney?
I think Mitt Romney would be an excellent choice because domestically and financially and from the economic side of life, we need a lot of work done in this country because of all of the things that are happening in the global economy. And I think he has a great deal of background and experience in that. And I think he would be a very, very good one that would be very capable. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be interesting to see, and at least we have a date that we know it's going to be answered. I think the whole convention scene is so very different than what it used to be through my lifetime, certainly. It's now ceremony. It's no longer a convention where the wheeling and dealing went on and the decisions really were made. It's now pure theater and pure ceremony.
Yeah. Well, before we take our break, John Smart, do you have some thoughts on the VP for John McCain?
No, I kind of agree with Margaret. I really think that he's probably going to choose Mitt Romney. I would be more likely to make a guess in this case than I was in the Democratic case. I think he's going to choose Mitt Romney because, well, he brings more with him, as Margaret just explained. At least he has a background in business and economics, and John McCain has admitted publicly that economics is not his strong suit. I think it would be best for him. The danger there, of course, is that Mitt Romney is also, you know, prone to the old tag of flip-flopper because he has been at various times pro-choice and pro-gay marriage and a whole lot of other things. He claims to have rediscovered his conservative roots, but I think a lot of people are skeptical.
We are talking with John Smart. He is former chair of the Bryce County Democratic Party, and Margaret Farrow, who is the former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, our two guests this week for the Week in Review. We're going to move on to some other issues. Barack Obama and John McCain got into it over who's patriotic on the campaign trail this week. We'll talk a little bit about that and some other issues, too. We'll move to the state of Wisconsin. Governor Doyle and Tammy Baldwin will be speaking at the Democratic Convention next week. We'll touch on that. We'll touch on the 8th Congressional District race between Steve Kagan and John Gard. And Ralph Nader seeking to add his name to the Wisconsin ballot. Just a few of the issues we'll try to cover before the end of the hour coming up here on the Week in Review. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hope you stay tuned. Veronica Rickert coming up after 9 o'clock. Veronica and her guest will talk about what's wrong with America's educational establishment, beginning with her guest's belief that too many young people attend college. Too many young people attend college. We'll find out more about that coming up after 9 o'clock. This is the Week in Review. I'm talking with two guests from different perspectives about the political news of the week. Both the presidential candidates spoke at the VFW convention this week, and we heard Barack Obama and John McCain exchanging words over patriotism. Let's take a listen.
Let me be clear. I will let no one question my love of this country. I love America. I love America. So do you, and so does John McCain.
You know, yesterday, Senator Obama got a little testy on this issue. He said, I'm questioning his patriotism. Let me be very clear. I am not questioning his patriotism. I am questioning his judgment. I am questioning his judgment.
All right, John Smart. John McCain had made the comments that Barack Obama would rather win the election than win the war in Iraq. Is he questioning judgment or patriotism there?
I think he's calling him a treason, you know, charging him with treason. I mean, if you, John McCain is standing up there saying to Barack Obama, you would rather win the election than win the war. You would lose the war in order to win the election. That is a charge of treason. And I don't think anybody can read anything else into it than that. And I think that Senator Obama was right in being offended, highly offended. I was offended when I heard it. And I think it's a disgrace that Senator McCain is using that kind of tactic.
Margaret Farrell?
Well, first of all, I think treason is rather an interesting thing to apply to that type of a comment, especially when you know, certainly I believe that what the issue was is, are you politicizing this issue, Senator Obama, because you have had one very, very supposedly strong stance through your legislative experience, though it's short, in the U.S. Senate, and now you're suddenly... As the very surge that you said is not going to succeed, and all the mandates you were putting out there that the troops had to be pulled out by a certain time period, now because we are having success, Iraq is beginning to take over its own country again. They're beginning to develop their own security forces again. Things are working, and now we're suddenly hearing a different explanation from Senator Obama about what we should do. I think what Senator McCain is saying, your tune changes for politics, not for the actual benefit of our effort there to free Iraq into their own self-determination.
I'm wondering, John Smart, if you want to talk about some Democrats who are worried that Barack Obama needs to fight back harder and maybe faster, saying they're worried that he's going to lose against John McCain, that John McCain is gaining in the polls, he's catching up. And are you one of those Democrats that's worried?
No, as a matter of fact. But I think what you're talking about, Joy, is the fact that, unfortunately, as it may be, negative campaigning works. And a lot of the charges that are being thrown, some of them are going to stick with people who don't do the research and don't figure out exactly what's going on and will listen to those charges. As when I said before that he was essentially charging Senator Obama with treason, that's what that is. If you are saying that a political success is more important to you than the lives of American soldiers and the success of America's efforts, then that's treason. That's what you're saying. And that's what John McCain was saying. Then he backed off and said, oh, no, I wasn't really questioning his patriotism. Well, of course he was. And the interesting thing about this, too, I think Margaret got this one a little bit wrong. What's happening now in Iraq is the fact that we are now putting in a timetable. Condoleezza Rice has been over there talking to Nouri al-Maliki, and they're putting together a timetable that's very similar to the timetable that Senator Obama has been suggesting all along. It's now happening. And now Senator McCain is trying to take credit for that by saying that his idea of the surge is what caused this to all happen. And anybody who's been on the ground over there, if you've read the details, a lot of the slowing down of the violence has to do with the fact that the Sunnis who were supporting al-Qaeda have backed off on that, and they were doing that before the surge even began. So I just think that we're kind of getting misinformation here, and I do think that Senator Obama has to some degree been too much of a gentleman. The classic story is what happened to Senator Kerry in the last election. When the Swift boat ads came out, I'm sure that Senator Kerry and his closest advisors said, who in their right mind is going to believe that garbage? And they didn't react fast enough. And unfortunately, a lot of people did believe that garbage.
Let's listen to two answers at the forum that was held at the Saddleback Church. Pastor Rick Warren on Saturday had both of the presidential candidates in for separate interviews. There was a brief overlap. And this is one of the questions he asked.
Does evil exist? And if so, should we ignore it, negotiate with it, contain it, or defeat it?
Defeat it.
Here's how Senator Obama answered that question.
Evil does exist. I mean, I think we see evil all the time. Mm-hmm. We see evil in Darfur. Mm-hmm. We see evil, some sadly, on the streets of our cities. Mm-hmm. We see evil in parents who viciously abuse their children. Mm-hmm. And I think it has to be confronted.
So evil needs to be confronted, and we see it right here at home. And John McCain says evil just needs to be defeated. Who had the better answer there, John Smart?
I think Senator Obama did, as usual. He's very thoughtful. He's a very intelligent man, and he's very thoughtful, and he's very, very caring. I'm going to tell a little story that always I tell people about Senator Obama. I first heard about him back in 1993 when I was visiting an old friend in Chicago, and she is a social worker, and she was telling me about this remarkable young man that she was working with on the south side of Chicago, and that he had graduated at the top of his class from Harvard Law, and he was the first African-American to ever be editor of the Harvard Law Review, and that graduating as he did, he could have named his job with any of the prestigious law firms in America at a six-figure salary to start with, and so forth and so on. But he chose to come back and work among the poor and the dispossessed on the south side of Chicago. And my friend was totally, totally taken with this guy, and she said, "You're going to hear from him, believe me. And his name is Barack Obama, and he is genuine." And I've always thought about that. I remembered it, and I remembered when I first read his name that he was running for the Illinois Senate. And I've been following him ever since. He's an extremely thoughtful and caring individual. And that comes across in that answer that he gave.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that, Margaret Farrell?
Well, I thought the what I was able to see of the Saddleback conference, the whole interview, I thought that Senator McCain's answers were very direct. They showed a man with a clear vision of what his thoughts were, his philosophy is, and what his commitment is to that philosophy. I think in terms of Senator Obama, interestingly, when he made his grand sweep and European tour and tour through Iraq, I'm not sure if some of the soldiers in Iraq know how caring he is, because they were anticipating the chance.
Margaret Farrell, do we lose you? We're gonna have to... Oh, I see what happened. For some reason. All right, are you there?
I'm here now.
Okay, sorry about that. We got you until the very, very, very end there. So we are almost out of time. We need to move on to some other issues. Let's switch to some state issues. So not much time. Chris in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I understand that the Republicans vetoed a power plant emissions reductions bill. I think it was going to reduce reductions by like 90% or have reductions of power plant emissions by 90%. And I think it was going to raise gas bills $12 a year. That's a dollar a month, if I'm not mistaken. And it was vetoed?
Not vetoed, but it was voted against. Right, Margaret Farrell, are you familiar with that one?
I have no idea. Are you talking federal or state legislature?
It's the state legislature. We'll look that story up and... I'll pass on some more information. Are you, John Smart, familiar with that one?
No, I'm sorry, I'm not.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the 8th Congressional District race, which is this week. Both John Gard and Steve Kagan unveiled their first ads of the campaign. Steve Kagan's was, well, let me, I guess I have time to quickly play them both. Here is Steve Kagan's first ad in the 8th Congressional District, which is far northeastern Wisconsin.
2 years ago, we sent Dr. Steve Kagan to Congress. He had never run for Congress before, so he did things a little differently. Steve Kagan refused to take a congressional pay raise. He rejected contributions from big oil companies. He earned national attention fighting to reduce health care costs. And he was the only member of Congress to stand up and refuse coverage for himself until every citizen has affordable health care.
I'm Steve Kagan, and I approve this message.
So everybody cheering there. Then John Gard's first ad takes Kagan to task over gas prices.
I'm John Gard, and I approve this message. Now let me take you on a quick tour. Here in northeast Wisconsin, the cost of gas is about $4 a gallon. In Saudi Arabia, 47 cents. That's nothing. In Venezuela, this is 12 cents. The problem starts here, where some in Congress, like Steve Kagan, voted to make it illegal for the U.S. to expand drilling, including here, where Cuba is now poised to drill. even with jet lag, Congress not letting us drill makes no sense to me.
All right, let's start with John Smart on the 8th congressional race.
Well, I think that John Gard kind of puts his foot in his mouth every time he opens it. But I think that Steve Kagan started out kind of rough. He had a few bad things that happened at the beginning, but he was totally inexperienced. He'd never been in any kind of a legislative situation before, and I think he's come through with flying colors. I think at the end of his first term, I think he's showing real promise for the future, and I think that he will be reelected. I think that John Gard really has nothing to run on except his combative skills and the record that he ran up as a Speaker of the Assembly in Wisconsin, which, to my way of thinking, is not a recommendation.
Margaret Farrell.
Well, I think when someone runs for office, they ought to be prepared to step in and begin to act like a congressman from the very beginning. And I have a clear memory of Congressman Kagan going on about how he confronted Karl Rove in the bathroom and gave him what for, and then called Laura Bush Barbara just to be funny and be insulting. That is a man who I don't know if he'd ever be prepared to be a congressman if that's the type of mentality he took to Washington when he started in his first term. And I don't think he has served his constituents well at all with some of his initiatives and some of his votes. And I think he's been propped up by the majority in Washington to keep that seat because, as we hear, Green Bay especially has become kind of one of those bellwether cities and areas in the country that seems to represent, as Green Bay goes, so goes the country. And so they want to hang on to that seat, so they're propping him up as much as they can.
Mm-hmm. We don't have time to go on to more of that particular race, but let's talk a little bit with... Well, let's see. We have Governor Doyle and Tammy Baldwin among the state dignitaries who will be speaking at the Democratic National Convention next week. What are you going to be looking for, John Smart, when you watch for coverage of that convention? You're not going out there, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I wish that I were, but I'm not. If you look at the list of speakers at the convention, it's jam-packed. And there are a number of other governors that are going to be speaking and a number of other members of Congress and so forth. Governor Doyle has obviously been invited because he was an early supporter of Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talk about how he might be offered a cabinet position in an Obama administration. And I think that Tammy Baldwin is being invited because she speaks for the women's issues in a way that very few people do. She's been a very forceful speaker and leader. And I think that's why they were invited. And I look forward to hearing them. I think that putting them on a national platform will be very exciting for us.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Margaret Farrell?
No, I'm happy for them. I think individually, as someone who has worked hard in politics, and both of them have had a long tenure in legislative activities for Congresswoman Baldwin and Attorney General, and now Governor ranks for the governor. I think it's a very good thing for them, and probably for the Democrats in the state as a whole. I am grateful for C-SPAN because if this convention and both conventions go as the previous ones have, the only ones that will be carrying those types of speeches will be the network we know as C-SPAN, because the commercial networks don't get on until 6 or 7 at night and then begin to have some carriage.
Yeah, well, I can't believe we're completely out of time. Margaret Farrell, thank you very much for being with us, and John Smart, thank you as well.
Thank you, Joy. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Margaret,
thanks, John.
Yeah, Margaret Farrell, former Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, John Smart, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and to Brittany DeAnda for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.